Sometimes those who are very corpulent want to appear more slim and vice versa, those who are very thin want to appear as if they had more flesh. This change or transformation is not permanently successful, however, on account of the archetype. The extra flesh put on a thin person or the quantity taken off one who is corpulent does not stay on or off permanently, but after a while the man who was originally thin returns to his original stature, while the person who tries to take off flesh finds himself putting it back on by degrees, and then has to go through the process anew. It is similar with people who attempt to mold their features and change them to an appearance that suits them better than their original one. However, changes affecting the features are less permanent because the facial expression there as here is an indication of the nature of the soul. Therefore, whatever is sham is quickly dispersed by the habitual thought of the person. During physical life is shaped more or less like an ovoid cloud surrounding the dense body, but as soon as the person gains consciousness in the desire world, and begins to think of himself as having the shape of the dense body, then begins to assume that form. This transformation is facilitated by the fact that the soul body, composes of the two higher ethers, the light and reflecting ethers, is still with the man. The ego. To put it more clearly and bring in a helpful comparison, we may remember that at the time when the ego is coming down to rebirth, the two lower ethers gathered around the seed atom of the vital body are molded into a matrix by the lords of destiny, the recording angels and their agents. This matrix is placed in the womb of the mother, where the physical particles are embedded in it so that they gradually form the body of the child, which is then born. At that time the child has no soul body. Whatever there may be of the two higher ethers is not assimilated until later in life and is built upon by deeds that are good and true. When the soul body has reached a certain density, it is possible for the person to function in it as an invisible helper, and during his soul flight molds itself readily into this prepared matrix. When he returns to the physical body, the effort of will whereby he enters it automatically dissolves the intimate connection between and the soul body. Later on, when the life in the physical world has been finished and the two lower ethers discarded with the dense body, the luminous soul body or golden wedding garment still remains with the higher vehicles, and into this matrix is molded at its birth into the invisible world. So as the body of the child was made in conformity to the matrix of the two lower ethers before coming to physical birth, similarly the birth into the invisible world which follows death in the physical region is attended by an impregnation with desire stuff of the matrix formed of the two higher ethers, to form the vehicle that will be used in that world. But the so-called dead are not the only ones who have the power thus to mold desire stuff into any shape they please. This power is shared by all the other denizens of the desire world, even down to the elementals, and they very often use this faculty of transformation to frighten or mislead the newcomer, as many a neophyte has found out to his consternation when he first entered that realm. For these little imps are quick to know when a person is a stranger and not conversant with the nature of things there, and they seem to take a special delight in annoying newcomers by transforming themselves into the most grotesque and terrifying monsters. Then they may feign atrocious attacks upon him, and it seems to give them the keenest delight if they are able to chase him into a corner and make him cringe with fear while they stand gnashing their teeth as if ready to devour him. But the moment the neophyte learns that in reality there is nothing that can hurt him, that in his finer vehicles he is immune from all danger of being torn to pieces or devoured, and that a quiet laugh at the harmless creatures and a stern command to take themselves off is all that is needed to cause them to turn their attention elsewhere, they soon learn to leave him alone. Thus he learns to force them to do his will, for in that world all creatures which have not been individualized are compelled to do the bidding of higher intelligences, and man is among the latter. It is a curious fact that subhuman elementals sometimes attach themselves to certain persons, to a family, or even to a religious society, but in such cases it was always found that their vehicle did not consist of the hardened sin body composes of an interlocking desire and vital body, but that the vehicle had been obtained through mediumship practiced by a person of ordinarily good character, and that the ether of this vehicle was in a state of disintegration. To offset this and to prolong their hold on such a vehicle, they demand of those whom they serve, regular offerings of food and the burning of incense. Though they cannot of course assimilate the physical food, they can and do live upon the ether fumes and odors which arise from it, also upon the fumes of incense. When the ego has freed itself from the vital body, its last tie with the physical world is broken, and it enters the desire world. The ovoid form of now changes its form, assuming the likeness of the discarded dense body. There is, however, a peculiar arrangement of the materials out of which it is formed, that has great significance in regard to the kind of life the departed will lead there. Of man is composed of matter from all the seven regions of the desire world, as a dense body is built of the solids, liquids, and gases of this world. But the quantity of matter from each region in of a man depends upon the nature of the desires which he cherishes. Coarse desires are built of the coarsest desire stuff, which belongs to the lowest region of the desire world. If a man has such, he is building a coarse desire body where the matter from the lowest regions predominates. If he persistently puts coarse desires away from himself, yielding only to the pure and the good, his desire body will be formed of the materials of the higher regions. At present no man is wholly evil, and none wholly good, we are all mixtures of both, but there may be and is a difference in our makeup. In the desire bodies of some there is a preponderance of coarse and in others of fine desire stuff. That makes all the difference in the environment and status of the man when he enters the desire world after death, for then the matter of his desire body, while taking on the likeness of the discarded dense body, at the same time arranges itself so that the subtlest matter which belongs to the higher regions of the desire world forms the center of the vehicle, and the matter from the three densest regions is on the outside. When the ego's earth life is ended, it exerts centrifugal force to free itself from its vehicles, following out the same law which causes a planet to throw that part of itself which is most dense and crystallized out into space. It first discards its dense body. When it enters the desire world, this centrifugal force also acts so as to throw the coarsest matter in outwards, and thus man is forced to stay in the lower regions until he has been purged of the coarser desires which were embodied in the densest desire matter. The coarsest desire matter is therefore always on the outside of his desire body while he is passing through purgatory, and is gradually eliminated by the purging centrifugal force, the force of repulsion, which tears the evil out of man and then allows him to pass upwards into the first heaven in the upper part of the desire world, where the force of attraction holds sway and builds the good of the past life into the ego as soul power, the discarded part of the desire body is left as an empty shell. When the ego has left its dense body, that dies quickly. Physical matter becomes inert the moment it is deprived of the quickening, life-giving energy, it dissolves as a form. Not so with the matter of the desire world. Once life has been communicated to it, that energy will subsist for a considerable time after the influx of life has ceased, varying as to the strength of the impulse. The result is that after the ego has left them, these shells subsist for a longer or a shorter time. They live an independent life, and if that ego to which they belonged was very much given to worldly desires, perhaps cut off in the prime of life, with strong and unsatisfied ambitions, this soulless shell will often make the most desperate efforts to get back to the physical world, and much of the phenomena of spiritualistic seances is due to the actions of these shells. The fact that the communications received from many of these so-called spirits are utterly devoid of sense is easily accounted for when we realize that they are not spirits at all, but only a soulless part of the garment of the departed spirit, and therefore without intelligence. They have a memory of the past life, owing to the panorama which was etched after death, which often enables them to impose upon relatives by stating incidents now known to others. But the fact remains that they are but the cast-off garment of the ego, endowed with an independent life for the time being. It is not always, however, that these shells remain soulless, for there are different classes of beings in the desire world, whose evolution naturally belongs there. They are good and bad, as are human beings. Generally, they are classed under one heading as elementals, although differing vastly in appearance, intelligence, and characteristics. We will deal with them only so far as their influence touches the postmortem state of man. It sometimes happens, especially where a man has been in the habit of invoking spirits, that these beings take possession of his dense body in earth life and make him an irresponsible medium. They generally lure him at first with seemingly high teachings, but by degrees lead to gross immorality, and, worst of all, they may take possession of his desire body after he has left it and ascended into heaven, as the impulses contained in are the basis of the life in heaven, and also the springs of action which cause man to reincarnate for renewed growth. This is indeed a very serious matter, for the whole evolution of a man may be stopped for ages, before the elemental releases his desire body. When both the good and evil of a life have been extracted, the spirit discards its desire body and ascends to the second heaven, then commences to disintegrate as the physical body and the vital body have done, but it is a peculiarity of desire stuff, that once it has been formed and inspired with life, it persists for a considerable time. Even after that life has fled, it lives a semi-conscious, independent life. Sometimes it is drawn by magnetic attraction to relatives of the spirit whose clothing it was, and at spiritualistic seances these shells generally impersonate the departed spirit and deceive its relatives. As the panorama of the past life is etched into the shells, they have a memory of incidents in connection with these relatives, which facilitates the deception. But as the intelligence has fled, they are of course unable to give any true counsel, and that accounts for the inane, goody-goody nonsense of which these things deliver themselves. When a man wakes up in the desire world, he is with one exception the very same man in every respect as before death. Anyone seeing him would know him if he had known him here. There is no transforming power in death. The man's character has not changed. The vicious man and the drunkard are vicious and dissipated still. The miser is a miser still. The thief is as dishonest as ever. But there is one great and important change in them all. They have all lost their dense body, and that makes all the difference in regard to the gratification of their various desires. The drunkard cannot drink. He lacks the stomach, and though he may and at first often does get into the whiskey casks of the saloons, it is no satisfaction to him, since whiskey in a cask does not give out fumes as it does during chemical combustion in the elementary canal. He then tries the effect of getting into the dense body of drunkards on earth. He succeeds easily, for is so constituted that it is no inconvenience to occupy the same space with another person. Dead people, at first, are often annoyed when their friends sit down in the chair they are occupying, but after a while they learn that it is not necessary to hurry out of their seat because a friend yet in earth life is approaching to sit down. It does not hurt the desire body to be sat on. Both persons can occupy the same chair without inconveniencing each other's movements. So the drunkard enters into the body of people who are drinking, but even there he receives no real satisfaction, and in consequence he suffers the tortures of Tantalus, until at last the desire burns itself out for want of gratification, as all desires do, even in physical life. While our evil habits are dealt with in this general way, our specific evil actions in the past life are dealt with in the same automatic manner by means of the life panorama which was etched into the desire body. That panorama begins to unfold backwards from death to birth, upon our entrance into the desire world. It unfolds backwards at the rate of about 3 times the speed of the physical life, so that a man who was 60 years of age at the time of death would live over his past life in the desire world in about 20 years. We remember that when viewing this panorama just after death, he had no feeling at all about it, standing there merely as a spectator, looking at the pictures as they unrolled. Not so when they appear in his consciousness in purgatory. Though the good makes no impression, but all the evil reacts upon him in such a way that in the scenes where he had made another suffer, he himself feels as the injured one. He suffers all the pain and anguish his victim felt in life, and as the speed of the life is tripled, so is the suffering. It is even more acute, for while the dense body is so slow of vibration that it dulls even suffering, In the desire world, where we are minus physical vehicles, suffering is more acute. The more clear-cut the panoramic impression of the past life was etched into at the time of death, the more the man suffers and the more clearly he will feel in afterlives that transgression is to be avoided. The desire world, the ethers, and the physical world interpenetrate one another so that the miser is right here among us just the same as he was when he had a physical body to wear. It is not generally understood, however, that the densest desire stuff of which the lower regions of the desire world are composed, and the chemical ether which is the lowest of the four ethers, and even the physical gases, are exceedingly closely knit and form the outside layer of all spirits which have just been released from the physical body. They are therefore living in the lower region of the desire world in such close touch with the physical that it is amazing to the writer that people cannot see them. Thus the miser and all others who have just left the physical body see the people in this world much more clearly than they see the things of the desire world where they are, for as the man who goes out in the sunshine must first accustom himself to see things by adjusting the focus of his eyes, so also the spirits which have just entered the desire world after death require a little time for this readjustment, and the densest material in their being, which is thrown out toward the periphery by the centrifugal force of repulsion, keeps them earthbound for a longer or a shorter time until they have shed this coarsest material and are able to contact the finer vibrations of the higher regions. For that reason the miser, the drunkard, the sensualist, and similar people whose desires are naturally low and vicious, remain in these nether regions, which may well be called hell, for a much longer time than people with high ideals and spiritual aspirations who have endeavored during life to eradicate their vices and to subdue their lower nature. Their desire bodies contain comparatively little coarse material and that is soon worn away, leaving them free to soar to higher spheres. There are no specialized sense organs in the finer vehicles, but just as we feel with the whole surface of our purgatory body, so the spirits see and hear, not only with the surface, but with every single atom of their spiritual body, inside and out. What they perceive is not really the physical things which we see with our physical eyes, but every chair, desk, or other physical implement is interpenetrated by both ethers and desire stuff. It is this that they perceive, and that to them is as real and tangible as the physical forms are to our senses. It is true that the atmosphere of the earth revolves with it, and so does the desire stuff which constitutes the desire world of our planet. However, those who have shed the mortal coil and are in the desire world see through the earth just as easily as we see through a pane of glass. The victim of murder escapes this suffering in purgatory because he is in a comatose state as a rule, until the time when natural death should have occurred, and is taken care of in that respect, like the victims of so-called accidents, but the latter are always conscious at once or shortly after death. If the murderer is executed between the time of the murder and the time when his victim would naturally have died, the comatose desire body of the latter floats to its slayer by magnetic attraction, following him wherever he goes, without a moment's respite. The picture of the murder is always before him, causing him to feel the suffering and anguish which must inevitably accompany this incessant reenactment of his crime in all its horrible details. This goes on for a time corresponding to the period of life of which he deprived his victim. If the murderer escaped hanging, so that his victim has passed beyond purgatory before he dies, the shell of his victim remains to act the part of Nemesis in the drama of reenactment of the crime. The sufferings of purgatory are the results of moral delinquencies and the resentment of those who are injured thereby. A surgeon who performs a constructive operation is doing a service which merits the gratitude of the person operated upon, and the picture of such an operation in the panorama of life will react upon him in the first heaven with the gratitude of the person he helped. It will make him more ambitious to serve his fellow men. On the other hand, those unscrupulous surgeons who persuade people to have operations performed for the love of experimentation, or who take them out of charitable institutions for that purpose will certainly be as severely dealt with as they deserve. As for the vivisectionists, purgatory, We have seen some cases compared with which the orthodox hell with its devil and pitchfork is a place of mild amusement. Yet there are no exterior agents of outraged nature to punish such an one, only the agonies of the tortured animal contained in his life a panorama reacting upon him with threefold intensity, because the purgatorial existence is only one-third the duration of the physical life. Those people do not realize what they are storing up for themselves, or the torture chambers would soon be emptied and there would be one horror less in the world. When a person, man or woman, has been very hard and harsh in life, when he has thought nothing of the feelings of others, when he has inflicted pain here, and everywhere on whatever occasion offered, we shall find that his suffering in purgatory will be very severe, intensified of course by the fact that the purgatorial experience is shorter than the life lived upon earth, but the pain is intensified in proportion. Now, therefore, it is evident that if his experience were continuous, if the pain engendered by one act were followed immediately by the next, much of the effect of the suffering would be lost upon the soul because it would not feel its full intensity. Therefore, the experiences, as it were, come to it in waves so that there is a period of respite after each period of suffering in order that the full intensity of the next may be felt. God never seeks to revenge or avenge any wrong, but only to teach those who permit themselves to do wrong not to repeat the act, by giving the wrongdoer exactly pain for pain. The tendency in a future life is to cause him to respect the feelings of others and so be merciful to all the world. Thus the very highest intensity in pain is necessary for the conservation of energy, and to make him good and pure sooner than would be the case if the pain were continuous and the suffering correspondingly lessened. If the dying man could leave all desires behind, the desire body would very quickly fall away from him, leaving him free to proceed into the heaven world, but that is not generally the case. Most people, especially if they die in the prime of life, have many ties and much interest in life on earth. They have not altered their desires because they have lost their physical bodies. In fact, often their desires are even augmented by a very intense longing to return. This acts in such a manner as to bind them to the desire world in a very unpleasant way, although unfortunately, they do not realize it. On the other hand, old and decrepit persons and those who are weakened by long illness and are tired of life, pass on very quickly. The matter may be illustrated by the ease with which the seed falls out of the ripe fruit, no particle of the flesh clinging to it, while in the unripe fruit the seed clings to the flesh with the greatest tenacity. Thus it is especially hard for people to die who were taken out of their bodies by accident while at the height of their physical health and strength, engaged in numerous ways in the activities of physical life, held by the ties of wife, family, relatives, friends, and pursuits of business and pleasure. The suicide, who tries to get away from life, only to find that he is as much alive as ever, is in the most pitiable plight. He is able to watch those whom he has, perhaps, disgraced by his act, and worst of all, he has an unspeakable feeling of being hollowed out. The part in the ovoid aura where the dense body used to be is empty, and although the desire body has taken the form of the discarded dense body, it feels like an empty shell, because the creative archetype of the body in the region of concrete thought persists as an empty mold, so to speak, as long as the dense body should properly have lived. When a person meets a natural death, even in the prime of life, the activity of the archetype ceases, and adjusts itself so as to occupy the whole of the form, but in the case of the suicide that awful feeling of emptiness remains until the time comes when, in the natural course of events, his death would have occurred. As long as the man entertains the desires connected with earth life, he must stay in his desire body, and as the progress of the individual requires that he pass on to higher regions, the existence in the desire world must necessarily become purgative, tending to purify him from his desires. How this is done is best seen by taking some radical instances. The miser who loved his gold in earth life loves it just as dearly after death. But in the first place he cannot acquire any more, because he has no longer a dense body wherewith to grasp it, and worst of all, he cannot even keep what he hoarded during life. He will, perhaps, Go and sit by his safe and watch the cherished gold or bonds. But the heirs appear and with, it may be, a stinging jeer at the stingy old fool, whom they do not see, but who sees and hears them, will open his safe, and though he may throw himself over his gold to protect it, they will put their hands through him, neither knowing nor caring that he is there, and will then proceed to spend his hoard, while he suffers in sorrow and impotent rage. He will suffer keenly, his sufferings all the more terrible on account of being entirely mental, because the dense body dulls even suffering to some extent. In the desire world, however, these sufferings have full sway and the man suffers until he learns that gold may be a curse. Thus he gradually becomes contented with his lot and at last is freed from his desire body and is ready to go on. Or take the case of the drunkard. He is just as fond of intoxicants after death as he was before. It is not the dense body that craves drink. It is made sick by alcohol and would rather be without it. It vainly protests in different ways, but of the drunkard craves the drink and forces the dense body to take it, that may have the sensation of pleasure resulting from the increased vibration. That desire remains after the death of the dense body. But the drunkard has in his desire body neither mouth to drink nor stomach to contain physical liquor. He may and does get into saloons, where he interpolates his body into the bodies of the drinkers to get a little of their vibrations by induction, but that is too weak to give him much satisfaction. He may and also does sometimes get inside a whiskey cask, but that is of no avail either, for there are in the cask no such fumes as are generated in the digestive organs of a tippler. It has no effect upon him and he is like a man in an open boat on the ocean, water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink, consequently he suffers intensely. In time, however, he learns the uselessness of longing for drink which he cannot obtain. As with so many of our desires in the earth life, all desires in the desire world die for want of opportunity to gratify them. When the drunkard has been purged, he is ready, so far as this habit is concerned, to leave this state of purgatory and ascend into the heaven world. The drunkards in the desire world usually attempt to manufacture the drink for which they crave when they have once learned that it is possible so to mold desire stuff that it becomes whatever you want it to be. But they all declare unanimously that the strong drink or the drugs which they manufacture in that manner give no satisfaction. They can imitate the taste perfectly, but the drink thus manufactured has no power to make them drunk. The nearest they can get to the satisfaction of a real drunk is to insinuate their bodies into those of drunkards who are still in the physical world. Therefore, they are continually haunting barrooms and endeavoring to get the frequenters of these places to take an excess dose of intoxicants. They also say that they get considerable satisfaction from the fumes carried by the breath of drunkards in their physical body, and the more heavy and pungent the atmosphere is in the barrooms, the nearer they come to finding the satisfaction for which they are seeking. If only the weaklings who visit such places could see and understand the disgusting tactics of the invisible reprobates hanging about such places, surely it would be an awakening which would probably help those who are not too far gone to retrace their steps to the path of decency and honest living. But, thank God, both for the visible and the invisible drunkards, it is impossible for them to create a den of vice in the desire stuff, because the force of repulsion tends to destroy it as fast as they can bring it into existence. Let us take as an illustration a drunkard who makes a beast of himself and at the same time abuses his children, depriving them of the necessities of life and the education which they ought to have, who beats his wife, setting the children an example they may follow, and generally lowering their moral standards. After death that man will feel in purgatory, first, the tortures of a craving for drink, which he is not able to satisfy, and second, he will feel all the suffering which he inflicted upon his family. He has then paid for his wrongdoing, and it is true that he comes back to rebirth with a perfectly clean slate so far as the actual suffering which he caused them is concerned. But he took a vow to love and cherish the woman who became his wife, and by the performance of the creative act and furnishing the nucleus for a body, he assumed the responsibilities of fatherhood toward the children which came to him for help and a suitable environment. the parental responsibilities he also neglected to fulfill, and there is consequently a tie between him and the members of his family.